morning again. It's a blessing to be with you. To quote Representative John Lewis, do not get lost in a sea of despair. Do not become bitter or hostile. Be hopeful. Be optimistic. Never, ever be afraid to make some noise and get in good trouble. We will find a way to make a way out of no way. The parables of Jesus at times seem simple at first glance, and yet they are filled with meaning that begs to be pondered. These teachings are not spoken in a vacuum that existed so long ago that they make no call to our attention today. Jesus didn't wander the countryside to just spout wise sayings that left folks stroking their chins and rubbing their brows. The parables emerge as direct responses to specific questions of the time. The context for today's parable must have included questions that are still as relevant to our earthly lives as they ever were, such as, if the kingdom of God is here as you say it is, why is there still the reality of evil? And how do we get rid of it? Such questions and many more like them were not unique to first century Palestine. We too wonder about evil in the world, in the church, within ourselves. The sharp increases of shootings on our streets, in our homes, and cars with children in them in our parking lots across the country bring these questions into sharp relief over and over and over, day after day. The renewed frustration, anger, and resulting protests at the callous disregard for human life, for bodies clothed by God's love for the beauty of diversity, and flesh of various colors, treated as ungodly, less than human, by some bodies clothed in white flesh, caught in the evil systems of white supremacy. We see the actions which thwart God's life-giving and loving intentions, and we can often name the evil when we see it. But what shall we do? Look away from it? Ignore it? Destroy it? As Wendy Farley reflects in her commentary on our passage from the Romans, Paul is reflecting on the meaning of a risen Christ in light of the suffering endemic to the human condition, and his anticipation that cosmic redemption is near at hand. For now, following Christ means living not in a different time, but in a different way, in a world that continues to long for redemption. Empire, then as now, remains alive and well. Ethnic and religious hostility, sexual violence, hunger, a violent criminal justice system, and most of all, callous indifference to the relentless oppression of humanity. How can we live in, but not of, these injustices? Further on, Farley continues, Paul uses flesh to evoke a destructive way of life. For him, we are fleshly in the metaphorical sense that we are entangled in systems which the works of the flesh become the norm, natural, even Christian. He implores the Romans to recognize the Spirit, bearing witness to their identity as heirs to God's love, because it is only a radical new identity that will empower them to live ethically, even under corrupt rule. The way of the flesh creates for us this moral universe wherein my relation to my own body, I come to relate my flesh, my white flesh, with a universe that sees only those who look like me as significant, as important. In So the suffering of those who are not like me or the us I surround myself with doesn't touch me. When this happens, it becomes impossible for me to see those unlike me in the flesh as under divine love. And this is the way of death. For Paul, we all carry the Spirit within us, all of us. And when we come to embrace that Spirit, we then see it in every life. Our life of faith and care is not meant to be lived apart from other lives. Our life of faith is not just about my salvation. It's about the salvation of you and you and you and you and all humanity and the earth itself. This is the way of life. This is the way of love that we hear our presiding bishop talk of every single time he speaks. We cannot in love be separated from one another by flesh, care, or even that love. Jesus says of the weeds and the wheat, let both of them grow together until the harvest. Jesus' words speak to the faith community today as he acknowledges that the wheat and weeds are indeed side by side. He names the isolationist tendencies of the church, for in the world around us, the wheat and the weeds are not easily separated. The goal of the life of faith is not to remain untouched by the world. The purpose of worship is not to be self-centered, picking and choosing who we think the good folks are and those with the proper economic status, the right flesh, and letting only them into our midst, into our fellowship. We don't gather together as some superiorly good group of people, and nor do we gather just for the sake of gathering. All that we do as people of faith is to enable us to serve God by working in the world for the hope and love of the kingdom. To do that, we are called into contact with people who many claim to be outside God's love. We enter societal, national, and global conversations where issues have more than one side. We go to the voting booth or fill in our ballot at home with God's kingdom of equity, justice, and love for all humanity, even those society deems outside the human family, on our minds, in our hearts, and then in our actions. We can never underestimate the importance of worship, prayer, study, fellowship, and the reality of our religious experience. And we must always keep alive the balanced perspective that the end purpose of our worship and study and gathering is that we will be in the world. And for us as Christian people of faith, be Christ to all our neighbors. Show love to the unloved, striving for justice for every person in God's name, seeing first the beauty of every body and all flesh. Jesus did not counsel that the weeds be ripped out. Often it is too hard to tell the difference between the good and the evil, and often we can't tell the difference with the people who are trying to tell the difference. The Greek word for weeds is not so easily translated as weeds. It is a seed known today as the bearded darnel. And in its early stages, it is impossible to distinguish from the wheat. But when both seeds grow enough to develop heads, recognition is easy. Yet by that time, the roots of the two are so intertwined that the weeds couldn't be pulled up without tearing the wheat out at the same time. And isn't that how it is with us? It's often difficult for me to talk about the evil people in the world because I can feel evil at war within myself sometimes. I have seen people who have totally given in to evil powers. And some do random acts of violence and vandalism for no reason at all. Some take the lives of others in the name of a right. Some and others disguise their evil acts in the name of personal right, because of the color of the flesh or their right of retaliation. I see them as responsible for the evil they create, but it is impossible for me to accept that they are then evil people who should be cast off and ignored, and that I am untainted with no responsibility at all. Evil done on our behalf. Jesus is patient with sinful people, persistent but patient. He gently knocks on the door to our hearts, not often bowling us over. He kept company with society's outcasts. He did battle with the religious legalists of his day, and he became angry with them. But mostly he displayed an infinite patience that I'm still striving for. In this text, his patience is made explicit. Don't rip out the weeds. You might be taking the wheat also. And how do you know the difference? Judgmentalism, hate, prejudice have never been the solution. React with force against evil usually includes the death and punishment of innocent people, even incurring what is often named as collateral damage, making crimes against humanity sound just, claiming the moral high ground, and yet taking the wheat with the weeds. How far different is that from the original act? Jesus did confront the powers of evil with impending judgment. Let them grow together until the harvest. That's when the judgment occurs. Jesus didn't rip out the weeds, neither did he ignore them. Instead, he confronts evil with the reality of a time of accountability, while seeking to bring mercy and justice into every life. We in the church and communities of faith have been taught lessons of morality, equality, justice, mercy, love, and freedom. What do we do when we see such standards violated? Jesus' example is our witness. The farmer in the parable acknowledges the reality of the weeds. He doesn't rip them out, neither will he ignore them. He confronts inequity, lives life among those rejected, even calls them to work beside him as he prays, teaches, preaches, lives, and acts in love, which at times brings him to anger and shouts of protest. Such would be our response to the evil we witness. We are hard-pressed to be the perfect judges in questionable cases of ethics. We can name evil when we see it, even in ourselves. And no, we can't just rip it out, but we can't ignore it either. We don't live in a perfect, ethically pure nation of people of faith. Not from the beginning of humanity has that been our truth. Nor does everyone in our community live their lives in the same way. There are evil forces at work, tempting us to take the easy way out, to be greedy, to protect number one, hurt or even kill, use people to acquire power and success, let everyone fend for themselves, buy weapons of war for our homes, in record numbers protect our rights. We cannot afford to ignore these forces as they work in us or in others. You and I are the called out ones. God doesn't tap us on the shoulder and just say, I've decided to save you, so now go sit down, enjoy your life, protect your belongings and the lives of your loved ones, go to church, be happy. No. In our baptism, Jesus says to us, you are related, all of you, everyone. You know what I did during my life on earth, loving, serving, listening, healing, teaching. It's tough work. It is. I lost my life. But you are my partner in mission and ministry, my co-creator of a world where my welfare is wrapped up in your welfare. Where love is at the heart of every single encounter, of all we do. Go to work. I have lots of others working too. You'll need all the love and support you can get. As Wendy Farley ends her commentary on Romans, we find that Paul is inviting us into a completely different universe from the one many of us know. He's inviting us to wake up to the fact that we are all children of God, and at the same time to wake up to our common humanity. All creation woven into one broken, beautiful, beloved whole. The system of the flesh separates and deceives. We remain creatures of the flesh. We are seduced by lies of power and supremacy. We allow hatred to seem noble. We retain callous indifference to the weeping of the earth. For Paul, these sufferings and imperfections are not worth comparing to the radiance of the promise. The Spirit crucifies us to the flesh and raises us to new life in which love is Lord of all. This was strange and seemingly impossible in the first century, and it remains so today. But it is the dream of our faith. It is the hope of our God. Our scripture readings point us to this life in the Spirit. In the wisdom of Solomon, we remember that God's strength is kindness, and God's righteousness spares us all. Finally, to quote from the meditations of an ancient theologian, if you love Jesus Christ more than you fear human judgment, then you will not only speak of compassion, but you will act with it. Compassion means seeing your friend and your enemy in equal need and helping both equally. It demands that you seek and find the stranger, the broken, the widow, the orphan, the prisoner, the oppressed, the unhoused, the marginalized, and comfort them and offer them help, offer them love. Use the power you have in you to change the systems that hurt, that oppress, that marginalize, that separate. Offer them love. Offer them hope. And herein lies the holy compassion of God that causes evil much distress.